The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Unpost. MyBills.ie. Help save time with bill payment online for free. Unpost. Do more.
Now, I'm going to go to Captain John Noble, who's a marine salvage expert. Now, Captain John Noble, you've been analysing the latest information on the missing flight, and you've questioned why it's taking so long to identify this debris.
Well, yes, I understand they have actually found some debris, and that has come through very recently. But it does seem to the delay between the debris, if it is debris, having been detected, and it being available for the detection being announced, there's a 5-day delay, and that, in my view, would certainly prejudice the effectiveness of an immediate search.
In what way?
Well, during the time the debris is in the water in the Indian Ocean, it's subject to the surface currents, which I'm told are quite strong there, but also to the effect of the wind and the waves.
So yeah,
it can be going many miles, maybe even 2 or 3 miles an hour, in the direction that is influenced by the wind and current. So where it was seen is one thing, but finding it at a location requires another circle of area to search.
Yes, it is like the needle in the haystack, or it seems to be. Now, I gather that you were saying that not a lot on a plane will float.
Well, not a lot, but there will be some items that will float if the fuselage was destroyed, if it hit the sea. You're looking at things like seat cushions, even the life jackets. I don't know if the passengers were able to don life jackets or not, but these are the sorts of things that will float, but they are very small, and it is very difficult to see them, even if you know they're there. So that is the real difficulty in finding debris that is small. If it's a part of the fuselage or the wing that is buoyant, that is easier to see, but still not easy.
Right. The I mean, it's 5-6 days. What it is said they saw was very, very large. So
yes,
if it was very, very large, are you saying it just wouldn't float?
Well, yeah, if it's a wing is subdivided, and it would float, as they found with Air France, the tail section remained afloat. So it could well float, but equally it is subject to the forces of nature in the wind and the waves, and if there is damage, that could make it work. So the fact is, we really do not know if it is afloat or not. We just have to hope that we can find it before it sinks.
In many ways, in these days of the most extraordinary capabilities in terms of information and tracking and all,
yes,
of that, it seems somewhat quaint, does it not, that flights are going out with people with binoculars looking out through windows in airplanes?
Well, it does, but the Mark 1 eyeball is a very effective device for detecting things. But you have to know roughly where they are. So it's a combination of sophisticated tracking devices and the eyeball. At the end of the day, if the tracking devices find it, it will be the eyeball that confirms what it is.
God bless the human being, I suppose, is what we can say.
Well, it can't do without us.
In that context. Anyway, listen, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. That was Captain John Noble. And as we all continue not to know what has happened, it has captured our imaginations, I suppose, because a lot of people fly nowadays. Anyway, we'll take a break.
1850 715 150.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, should the citizens, as a caller whose data was checked, be made aware of same? I think they should. That's an interesting point. Didn't think about that. Now, we're going to move on to somebody that's in severe difficulty with legal systems elsewhere, shall we say. Julie Marco, you're very welcome indeed to the programme.
Thank you.
You headed off on a backpacking holiday when?
In 2007, I took myself off to Greece and I went island hopping around Greece. Ended up getting a job in Crete and was supposed to come back after 2 or 3 months and get a proper job, and ended up staying for about 6 months because I met my now husband, Mark.
Right. There. And it was kind of love at first sight?
Pretty much instantly when I met him, I knew that he was the person I was supposed to be with for the rest of my
life. And what nationality is he?
He's actually from Albania. He moved to Crete when he was about 16, 17. He followed his brothers there.
Oh, right.
So he's the second youngest of 7 children. So it was just expected that he went to Greece, and he worked, they all worked there, set themselves up there, and tried to make a better life for themselves in Greece.
So what was the reaction like when you came home and said, Mummy and Daddy, I want to tell you something?
Well, my mum actually came to Crete to meet Mark, and she instantly took to Mark in the summer of 2007. My sister also came out at the end of the summer, and she actually came home and told my dad, I think we're in trouble here. there's something different about this one. And I came home and pretty much told him I was going back. I was moving back to Greece.
So right.
That was it. So.
But you got married here.
Yeah. I went back to Greece initially, and I lived there for 2 years. And then in 2009, Mark and I got married in Kilkenny.
And did you decide to settle in Ireland at that point?
At that point, prior to that, we had decided that we were going to settle in Ireland. I enjoyed Greece and I enjoyed the lifestyle in the summer, but it's not for long term. It's quite difficult. It's seasonal work. So you work very long hours for 6 months of the year, and then it's very difficult to find work. And also, it wasn't a place that I wanted to settle down and have children, and I didn't want to bring my kids up there. So we decided we wanted to move home. So we initially moved back to Greece for another season. And the plan was to move home in December 2009,
right,
which we did.
And then what happened?
Well, when we moved back, I got work straight away. I'm a qualified primary school teacher, but I got a job as a Montessori teacher. Mark struggled to find work. I think.
Of course, you couldn't have got your timing.
We picked
worse.
The worst time when we came back. It was really at the lowest, and. So he really struggled with not working. He's the type of person, he needs to work. He doesn't like being idle. He spent the first 3 months in my parents' house painting and decorating and up in my grandparents' house, cutting hedges and things like that, just to keep busy. He needs to work. So he started to become quite homesick and struggled with the cultural shock, and not working didn't help. So so in that summer of 2010, his brothers offered him a couple of weeks building work. His brother is a self-employed builder in Crete, so the flights were pretty cheap. So I sent him back in for a couple of weeks, and he came back then after 5 weeks. In the meantime, we had been planning to set up a home-based child minding service in my home in Carlo, and that was just about off the ground. So the couple of weeks were at work suited grand, because it got us to the point of September when the creche was to open. So Mark was home for the month of August, because there was no building work in Greece in the month of August. And then he went back supposedly for 2 weeks to finish this job that they were working on, and he was there 5 days when he was arrested.
And charged with what?
They said he was a member of a gang that committed 7 armed robberies of jewellery shops that happened during the summer of 2010. And also a litany of burglaries and car thefts and anything else they could throw at him, basically. For 3 of those 7 armed robberies, he was actually here in Ireland. For about half of the other charges that they threw him, he was also here in Ireland. And the rest, I think it's 11 of the 16, he's been charged with 16
charges
in total.
Yeah.
And 11 of those, they didn't attempt to bring any evidence whatsoever. And the, for the others that they did bring evidence, it's unreliable, it's not credible, it just doesn't
add up.
What is
the evidence against him?
The evidence that they claim against him, they brought a DNA report that they claimed they found Mark's DNA on a pair of rubber gloves. They claim also that these rubber gloves were found in an abandoned car, and this abandoned car was used in a robbery on the 5th of June. And firstly, on the 5th of June, Mark was definitively in Ireland, and I have documentation that proves he was here. Also, for those gloves, there's no search and seizure report, so they cannot be certain of where those gloves were actually found. And the claim that they were found in this abandoned car, the search and seizure report for that car doesn't make any reference to any items being found in it. So it's extremely suspicious. And on top of that, the defence now has drafted in, with the assistance of the Irish Innocence Project, Dr. Greg Hampikian, who's a leading DNA expert from the Idaho Innocence Project. And he has since December there now, he has told us that there is actually no identification of Mark on these gloves. There's no identification of his DNA there. The other evidence that they claimed to use against him was witness identifications. And
yeah,
these witness identifications were obtained in a manner that there was severe malpractice and procedural errors. For instance, the identity parade that was presented to these witnesses, that no dummy suspects were presented to them. A legal requirement in Greece that is that they have to, the witness has to give a written description of the people they're attempting to identify. Instead, the police provided the witnesses with photographs of the men they were just about to identify and gave them information that they shouldn't have given about their relationships and things like that. So
you're saying that he was stitched up?
I've been told by Mark's lawyer that the reason for this, or why we've ended up in this situation, is that the authorities were under huge pressure to find somebody for this. And the reason he was convicted then was because they were of the social pressure and prejudice that the media portrayed that was present in the courtroom on that day.
And why would they? I mean, why would they stitch somebody up if he was innocent? I know it has happened many times all over the world, but why do you think they would do that?
That's a question I can't get an answer from. I bang my head off a brick wall constantly asking the lawyers, how can you tell me that this is not okay, it's not right, what they're doing is wrong, what they're doing is in some cases illegal, and tell me there's nothing I can do about, or there's nothing we can do to change it, or that Mark just has to sit in prison and rot until they decide that they're ready to actually look at the evidence.
Now, you have started getting help in Ireland with, because I presume the legal costs are horrendous.
Yeah, we are, to date, my parents have basically been helping me, and also Mark's family in Greece have been funding it, and the legal fees and expenses and court fees alone have exceeded about €100,000. And on top of that, we have to send money to Mark in prison to keep him alive there. He's to buy shampoo, toothpaste, food, water in the summertime, things like this. So,
and
yeah,
do you
it's
get to
extensive.
See him?
Prior to March of last year, he was in a pretrial detention in Crete, so I got to see him a bit more. But in March of last year, they moved him to mainland, and he's in a prison in the middle of nowhere. So I've seen him 5 times in the last year, but it's a long trek. I have to, if I'm going from here, it's a 2-flight haul to Athens, and then a 4-hour drive. I have to rent a car, a 4-hour drive to see him, and then I have to pay for accommodation to stay in hotels,
right,
and then come back as well. So.
And it's under appeal. There was to be an appeal hearing and then it was cancelled.
Yeah.
And when is the appeal coming up?
We got a date set for the 4th of December last, and that was postponed by 6 months. So we're going back now on...
Why was it postponed?
On a technicality, the defence had requested that that we had an expert confirm that the stamps in Mark's passports were legitimate, because the prosecutor had claimed all of our documents, not just the stamps, everything that we used to prove Mark was in Ireland. She claimed that we forged the documents at the original
trial.
So
what do you have to get, an affidavit or something?
We have legal affidavits from witnesses that he was here, his employment records. We have everything. But
the airline tickets.
Airline tickets, yeah. And all of those have been apostilled, stamped by the Department of Foreign Affairs to confirm that they are
our department.
The Irish, yeah. Department of Foreign Affairs. So, but the issue with the passport, we had requested that they won't release his passport to Mark's defence team. So the only way we could confirm the legitimacy of the stamps was that they assign an expert who can just produce a report and confirm that they are real stamps.
Right.
And they had 10 months to do that prior to the appeal date in December, and they failed to do it. And the it was a defence petition. The defence said, it's fine, we don't need it. We have a legal affidavit from Aer Lingus, and they said, no, they wanted it. So that was the technicality that they postponed it for 6 months.
So have you got pro bono lawyers now?
We don't know. We have the assistance of the Irish Innocence Project, and they work fully for free.
Yeah.
And also Dr. Hampikian from the Idaho Innocence Project, and they've been fantastic. His lawyers in Athens aren't free lawyers. We have to fundraise to pay for those.
Right. And how are you coping on a personal level?
On the outside, I'm getting very good at pretending I'm okay, but that's a difficult question to answer. I don't cope most days. I rely on my parents to get me through the day, and they've almost become my carers nearly. It is very difficult, very, very difficult.
And what nationality? He's Albanian.
Yeah.
Have his, so to speak, Department of Foreign Affairs done anything for him?
No. We initially tried to contact his embassy when he was arrested, and it took us, I think, 8 weeks to finally get through to them. And when we did, they told us there was nothing they could do. Since then, we've had support from Irish MEPs, and they've helped me get the support from the Albanian embassy. And they sent somebody to visit Mark in prison. But a couple of days prior to the appeal in December that was postponed, they were supposed to come to the court and be there for Mark, and they contacted Mark's lawyer and told them they were too busy and they couldn't come. So he hasn't had any assistance whatsoever from his embassy or foreign affairs.
Right. So what is your plan now? I mean, you're a grown woman, so to speak. You're living at home with your parents, and they're minding you.
Pretty much.
Where do you go from here? What happens from here?
I can't plan anything. I can't plan past the 7th of May. And the problem for the past 3.5 years is they keep moving the goalposts on me. So at the moment, what's keeping me going is we have been fundraising for the past two months, and I will continue to do that into May or into April, and then I will head back to see Mark and try and prepare myself psychologically and mentally ahead of what's to come in on the 7th of May.
Right.
So, but we've been keeping busy with we're travelling around the country doing car boot sales, selling everything, collection days. We've just met somebody organising a coffee morning now next week and things like that. So that's my plan. I've got a plan up until the 7th of May, and after that I have no
idea. And how long was he sentenced for?
18 years. They sentenced him to 18 years.
And what will happen if that stands?
I can't even comprehend that at this stage. All I know is that if it goes wrong again in May, I have no idea what's going to happen.
Right.
I don't know how Mark is going to cope with it. I don't know how I'm going to cope with it. I don't know how my family are going to get through it. We reached our tipping point long ago, but December's knock, that the appeal being, we'd wait so long for that appeal and for it to be postponed just so flippantly. It's been the hardest knock to get up from. So we can't take any more knocks, and it's
In the meantime, are you working?
When I go to Crete, I have a friend.
No, here,
in
teaching.
Here. No, I'm not teaching. I can't commit to a job over here. I had been working with a Montessori school, but I have to go back and forth to Greece. And it's, as I said, we've been in December and now I have to go again in April. And so it wouldn't be fair even on the children if you were working with them to be coming and going like
right.
that. And so, no, when I go to Greece, I pick up a bit of casual work with a friend there. And here I concentrate on the fundraising
right.
To keep me going. But
well, we will watch, as they say, and keep an eye on it. And hopefully things will go your way. It seems extraordinary if you have evidence that he was here, but Hopefully justice will prevail.
Please, God.
Okay.
Thank you
very, very much indeed. That was Julie Markle. And now we will pause for the Angelus.